This episode of the Topcast is presented in collaboration with our friends over at Sheet Music Plus.
You know, I was listening to things like Guns N' Roses and Van Halen and all these kind of guitar-related genres, as well as, you know, all the stuff that my parents put me up with was all guitar-based, and it all just clicked into place. And I come home that night and I go, "Dad, I think I want to play guitar." And he just went, "Oh, I've been waiting 2 years for you to say that." That was it.
Hi teachers, it's Tim here and welcome to the Topcast. Great to have you back with us again for a very exciting first in a three-part series with an incredible teacher called Michael Gumley. And I've got lots to unpack just as I quickly introduce this episode, because we have a very, very big announcement coming up here at Top Music. And it's all due to the fact that one thing I've been asked regularly since launching my Top Music Pro membership 5 years ago is... people will be saying to me, "Oh, but I'm a guitar or I'm a vocal, trumpet, drum, you know, insert non-keyboard instrument teacher. Where's my Top Music Pro membership?" And until now, I've only been able to sympathize with them and say, "Yeah, well, I'm sorry, but there's not much out there for you, unfortunately," because up until now, there hasn't been nearly as many PD and online training options for support and resources for teachers of instruments other than piano. Piano teachers like me, we're very, very lucky. We have so much repertoire, we have so many resources, and we have so many hundreds of thousands of teachers around the world creating all sorts of courses and resources that we can learn from, but it's not necessarily the case with all the other instruments. So today actually marks the countdown to launch of our, drumroll, Top Music Pro guitar program, which we've been working on for months. And the goal of it is to support teachers of guitar around the world, just as we have done with all our piano teachers. We've already been hard at work creating lesson plans and courses and business-related material specific to the challenges of teaching guitar. And in today's episode, we're going to meet the person heading up the new program here at Top Music. So if you're a guitar teacher or you know someone who is, please, please, please share this episode with them so that we can help spread the word about this exciting new development and let as many guitar teachers around the world know about it. And if you're a piano teacher who also teaches guitar, then you're going to be in for a treat, because we have a heap of fantastic content coming up for you. Today's show notes and full transcript are available, as always, at topmusic.co/episode254. So because this is such a big topic, and Michael, as you'll hear, is just a wealth of knowledge. He has so many incredible ideas, right from pedagogy right through to business and information that impacts teachers of all instruments, can I just say. What we thought we would do is actually split this into a three-part series. And so we're going to unpack a whole lot of tips, we're going to bust some myths, and we're going to generally talk about how to engage and motivate today's students, both guitar and all other instruments as well. So here's how the breakdown is going to work. In today's episode, which is part one, we're going to be meeting Michael Gumley, who is our Top Music Pro head of guitar, and we're going to unpack his own story, because I think it's instructive to know how he's come to be working with us today, the experiences that he's had both as a student and a performer, and now a teacher running a very large music school here in Melbourne. And we're going to talk about the plans that we've got for this new element of Top Music Pro membership. Then in part two, which will come out next week, we're going to be talking about tactics and strategies for teachers of all instruments from Michael around goal setting, disengagement versus being a bad student, in inverted commas, mindset, money. We've got lots to talk about that one. And that episode is very generalist. It's for teachers of all instruments. And then in part three, we're going to hone in a bit and we're going to be talking specifically about guitar teaching, including common mistakes guitar teachers make, why all methods aren't created equally. We're going to talk about gamification and heaps more. And look, even in part three, the information we talk about is really relevant to just about teachers of any instrument as well. So regardless of whether you're going to be tuning into that one or not, I know you're going to get lots out of any parts of this three-part series that you're going to tune into. My guest today, Michael Gumley, is a guitar teacher and music educator from Melbourne, Australia. He's the owner and head teacher at Melbourne Guitar Academy, and actually didn't start playing guitar until he was 15, but was instantly hooked from the very first note he played, as you'll hear in today's episode. Almost every waking moment was spent with a guitar in his hand and visions of being a rock star in mind. Sounds like most guitar students, certainly my son. He would go on to complete VCU Music, that's our Year 12 music program here, and enroll in a Bachelor of Music Performance at university. Michael brings his passion for music and love of all things guitar to each and every lesson and seeks to capture the same excitement and wonder that captivated him during his guitar journey with all of his students. Welcome to the show and to the Top Music team, Michael Gumley. Great to see you today.
Jim, it's great to be here. I've wanted to work with you and the Top Music team for, you know, since I met you guys over a year ago at the Piano Pivot event, and I just couldn't be happier to have this opportunity to partner with you and to help a lot of guitar teachers and music teachers in general.
Can't wait to get stuck into all that we've got planned. And yeah, you've reminded me of Piano Pivot Live. Honestly, that event, I mean, that was January 2020, just before the world kind of shifted on its axis. It feels like, I don't know about you, but it feels like about 10 years ago. It really doesn't feel that close.
Yeah, like you look at where it was on a calendar and it just seems like it was way, way, way longer than what it was. But yeah. No, that was a fantastic event, and hopefully when the world's ready, we can start doing some more live events, because I think that was, out of all the events I've attended, music-wise or business-wise, that was one of my favourites.
Yeah, it was great, and we would love to do them again, hopefully in multiple places around the world too. But anyway, that's for down the track. I'm just so pumped because I've been wanting to serve teachers of other instruments ever since I launched Top Music Pro back in 2016. So obviously the focus, because I'm a piano teacher, has naturally been piano. But the dream is soon to be a reality with the launch of our new guitar teachers program, and this is where you are instrumental, pardon the pun, in making this a reality for teachers around the world. So in advance, I'm just going to thank you on behalf of all the guitar teachers of the world, because I know the quality of resources that you put out, the content, the support you give is phenomenal, and I'm just delighted that we're going to be able to offer that to our Top Music membership in the future. So, look, today I reckon we should get started with in our part one. So this is part one of a three-part series. And part one, we're going to be talking to Michael about a bit of his story, because it really will resonate, I think, with a lot of music teachers generally and also guitar teachers. So can you tell us, how did you come to be doing the work that you're doing today? Give us a bit of your story.
Yeah, well, I obviously did a music test when I was in year seven, like the first week, where they try and test everyone's aptitude, and I was apparently the first person in a couple of years that got 100%. And I didn't do much music-wise apart from my parents loved music and always exposed me to music, and they bought me a piano, which I didn't use when I was like, you know, six or seven. but yeah, I just did this test, got brought down a music night, and they said, Michael, we've got the perfect instrument for you. And I was like, awesome, what is it? And they were like, it's an oboe. And I think me and my dad just like looked at each other and like, are they serious? And my dad sort of said on the spot, hey, would you like to learn an instrument like guitar or drums? Like, you know, that matches all the music that you like. And I got all shy and said, oh, I could never do that. And for whatever reason, you know, sometimes when you're a kid and you get a bit nervous, I just got all shy and said, no, I don't want to do this. And being me, I'm 6 foot one. I was about 6 foot in year seven. And we had those dinky little desks where you have the desk attached to the stool. And it was always the last 2 hours on a Friday. For year seven and eight, I really did not like music class, because we got forced to play, you know, classical piano. It was always like the wrong part of the day. I didn't.
Oh, Friday. I've been a teacher of classroom music. Friday afternoon, that would be the worst. Oh, you poor thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I just did not like music at all. And then it wasn't until I was almost 15, my cousin Darcy obviously started guitar lessons, and for his birthday, they ordered him an electric guitar, but it didn't arrive for a couple of months later. And the day it arrived, we went around and played it, and he showed me how to do a few things. And I spent the rest of his, like, you know, late birthday celebration playing his guitar.
Yeah. So wait, just before you go on, what happened with the oboe? Did you end up, was that part of the like year seven classroom band program? Did you end up playing it?
No, that was like the, you know, the concert band. So they sort of try and sign up all the people for the stage band and the performing band in all the classical and those kind of instruments. And my school, Panola, in the western suburbs of Melbourne, I think had a really good music program and were really, really supportive. But, you know, the academic sort of, for lack of a better word, the structure of the college was always like, yep, we've got to put emphasis in the stage band and the concert band and all those kind of things, just out of tradition. So I never ended up taking up the oboe. I never did any lessons for year seven and eight. I continued to do okay in music class, you know, despite not enjoying it that much. But, yeah, that was the end of the oboe. Never picked one up. in my life, and it's pretty much on the list of like instruments, kind of like a recorder that
got it.
Go near and it's with a 10-foot pole. But
so did so Darcy was given this guitar, and you ended up playing it when you were there, and it was kind of given to him, not you. So did your parents then kind of pick up on this and go, oh, okay, well, maybe this is something that we should pursue with Michael?
Yeah, well, I spent probably two hours at that party, or you know, every spare minute I'd go, hey, Darcy, can you show me something? He'd show me something. He'd go out and go back and hang out with people. And I'd come out 10 minutes later and go, hey, I got it. Can you show me something? And that was right about the time, you know, when you're, it's a crucial time with most teenagers that generally happens around the age of 14 when music actually becomes important to them. So, you know, when kids are 12 and under, you know, they might know a few Minecraft things and video games and movie stuff, but they're not really independent in knowing their own, you know, music and making their choices. But when you become 13, 14, it starts to become part of your identity. So that's what was happening to me. I was listening to things like Guns N' Roses and Van Halen and all these kind of guitar-related genres, as well as, you know, all the stuff that my parents brought me up with was all guitar-based. And it all just clicked into place. And I come home that night and I go, Dad, I think I want to play guitar. And he just went, oh, I've been waiting 2 years for you to say that. And that was it.
That's what a great
story.
That
was only a couple of weeks later. So, yeah, we ended up probably within a week, we went down to a local guitar shop, Billy Hyde's. It's now called Macron Music, which is a fantastic store. I'll give them a shout out for all the people in Melbourne who want to go to the best guitar store in Melbourne. Head down to Macron Music in the location of the original store. But Dad took me down there. I picked out a guitar, and the worst thing was I had to wait 2.5 weeks for to go home, you know, open it up and play it. So I think he let me have a go on it for about half an hour before we put it away. But, you know, it was just that awesome, exciting, that sense of discovery you get when you're a teenager or a young student and you're discovering things for the first time.
Was it an electric or acoustic?
Well, it was an acoustic. You know, I bought into what I call the Father Christmas myth, where it's we'll buy you a cheap acoustic guitar in the beginning, and if you're good, we'll talk to Santa Claus and he might bring something really good. This is a bit of a side topic, but I'm a firm believer that if the student is listening to primarily electric-based music, you want to put them on an electric guitar as soon as possible, because it allows them to capture that music that they like and enjoy, and it's going to be, you know, more like the real thing. If they're listening to AC/DC and Guns N' Roses and Led Zeppelin, put them straight on an electric. It's going to have a little bit of a, you know, a bigger price margin to get into it in terms of you've got to spend a bit more, or as I say, invest a bit more, because we like to invest rather than spend. But it's going to be way better for their, you know, long-term commitment, because if you start them off on what I call the Aldi special, you know, $50 cheap nasty guitar, it's going to be hard to play. It's going to cut up their fingers. It's not going to sound great, and that's going to lead to them being demotivated and not being as likely to find it fun and enjoyable.
We actually invested, so Jack, our son, started on an acoustic. It was really nice, 3/4 size acoustic, recommended by a friend actually. It was a beautiful instrument, really, really lovely. And then he got the bug for wanting to try some electric. And there was actually Fender, I think it's Fender, actually make a pretty good package for young guitarists, at least in my very basic knowledge of guitar, but guitar with an amp. Kind of package. I can't remember what it's called, but and for under maybe $300, $400, so not amazing, but pretty good and sounds great, I think.
100%. And I think if you are going to buy shorter size guitars for younger students, you've got to go with a good brand. Like Fender's great, Yamaha do some really great stuff. I would say the Yamaha acoustics are probably the best guitars you can get on the market for that age group and that price point. And the Fender do a really good job with the electrics, and Yamaha as well, but they're about the same price, you know. But I would say to anyone buying guitars for their children, you know, you want to invest in a good instrument that's going to be likely to keep them motivated, that's going to sound good, that, you know, ultimately they're not going to sound great for the first couple of weeks to a couple of months, and you can curve a lot of the problem of that just by buying a good instrument that facilitates good playing. So I was going to say, without making this podcast an endorsement of Fender and Yamaha,
yeah,
they do great stuff. And, you know, you get what you pay for. If you pay for a really cheap, nasty guitar, then you get really cheap, nasty results. So it's, you just want to always invest the best you can and see it as a long-term investment as well. If you were going to buy them a car, would you buy them an old rust bucket death trap kind of thing that's not going to be good if they have an accident, or are you going to invest into, you know, getting them something with all the safety features and it's going to look after them if they do get in trouble?
I want to hear from all our overseas listeners whether a rust bucket death trap is an Aussie term or if other people use that as well. That's funny. I was just thinking too, you know, the same goes for any instrument really. I mean, if a student is trying to learn on an instrument that's, you know, 100 years old and has been collecting dust for years in grandma's, you know, back cottage, then, you know, there will always be challenges when it comes to being able to get great sounds out of it. And I'm sure the same goes for violins and whatnot. So I think that's a very generic problem that we have in making sure that our students are actually playing on an instrument that's relatively good but within the parents' price bracket, et cetera. And, pianos, there's a whole minefield around digital pianos versus keyboards versus acoustics and all that kind of stuff. Let's not go into that now, though.
Yeah.
I just want to go back quickly to your comment about identity, because this is a big one for me. That age around 14, as you say, 14, 15, is a super crucial point in any music student's life, and it's one that a lot of teachers struggle to get students over that hump, I think, and parents for that matter. Being a parent now myself, I know it all too well. Because there does seem to be quite a bit of a mountain to climb through those years of from whenever they start through 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. If you can just get them over that hump, the snowball effect seems to take hold for most students if they can start forming that identity as a musician. So have you ever thought, you've been teaching for many, many years, number one, have you experienced that as well? And number two, any kind of thoughts on ways to deepen students' identity as a musician in that period of time?
Yeah, 100%. My school is probably about 40% children, and that's one of the best age ranges to teach. I think a lot of guitar teachers who skip children because they're too hard or whatever are really doing themselves a disservice, because they're such a joy to teach, but they can also be total nightmares if you're not equipped with the right skill or you don't do it the right way. But to get back to the topic of that age range, we always tell parents that, you know, if you're starting anywhere between the age of 6 to 12, all we're doing is nurturing a love of music and appreciation of the art of guitar or whatever instrument it happens to be, and we're just building up a foundation of skill so that when they hit that point and it clicks over, then they've already got all the skills they need, their techniques where it's at, they've got the music knowledge, and they've got all these skills that we've been building in them so that then they can just take it and run. So when most people are, you know, finding their spark and the inspiration going, yep, I want to play guitar, I want to play piano, our students have had 6 years of building up to that skill and they're, you know, light years ahead by that point. So we always say, or even the education system, most people do maths for an hour a day, 5 days a week for 6 to 12 years in our education system, and they still are very average, if not totally bad at maths. Yes,
sadly, but
we're trying to get progress out of, you know, a 30-minute music lesson once a week with potentially no practice at home. And you go, well, why can't my son play music? Why can't he play as good as these musicians that, you know, I hear on commercial radio in my CD collection who already play guitar 5 hours a day, every day for 10 years before they got discovered? So it's, you know, one of those apples and oranges comparisons. You don't watch their football game on the weekend and go, hey, little Timmy didn't kick 5 goals like Gary Ablett, or get 30 touches, we're going to pull him out of footy. No, you accept the fact that at their age level, they're still developing and they're learning. So with our parents, we try and preempt and change the perspective that, hey, for the first couple of years, we're going to be having fun, we're going to make them love music, and we're going to balance getting results with having fun. So it's not going to be a total party with no results to show, and it's not going to be we're coming down so hard that the student is put off learning entirely. We're getting that balance where they love it, and that's going to motivate them to practice where they're at now. And then when they make that distinction in their own maturity to go, yep, this is something I want to do more seriously, then away they go. So it's just about with teachers going, yep, you've got to hold on, you've got to make it fun, you've got to get them to the point where they want to do it. And then if you get them to that point, all you've got to do is steer them in the right direction and you know, let them take themselves off from there. You just got to ignite the fire and keep on stoking that flame.
Well, let's go back to Michael, teenage Michael. You've been learning for a little while. You've got the guitar. Your dad's really supportive. You're obviously listening to lots of music at home too. So tell us the rest of the story. What happens then?
Yeah, so, you know, birthday, I think 2005, 3rd of August, I turned 15. I get up at 6 a.m. and open up my guitar and wake the rest of the house up. And then luckily I had my first guitar lesson at 9:30 that morning. So it makes it super easy for me to calculate how long I've been playing. I may just make it from my birthday there. But, yeah, I pretty much was one of those guys that was 6 hours a day from the very first day. So it was wake up, play guitar for an hour or two before morning, before going to school. And then at school, I'd obviously have my lesson or, you know, then music class got a lot more fun because in year nine, we actually got to pick music as well. So we got to actually choose whether we did guitar, drums, singing, or piano. And then all of a sudden, yep, music was fun because I could actually play guitar. And, you know, on a side note, this is one of the key things of getting those teenagers engaged, like you said, is helping them do what they want to do and helping match it to their identity. And I had lessons. My teacher at the time did a lot of things really, really good, and he did a lot of things which, you know, in retrospect, I think a lot of teachers' mistakes that they make, which they could fix and get a lot more out of their students. But one thing he did right was provide opportunities for growth. And this was tying back to your previous questions about what can teachers do to improve themselves and their teen students. It's giving them those opportunities for performances, for playing in ensembles, for doing special projects like, you know, how do you run a gig or how do you organize a music career and things like that. Or, all right, we've got a showcase booked, but you guys are going to do all the marketing and the promotion and things like that. So that's something that my guitar teacher, Dave, did really, really, really well was create opportunities for his students. And he even did it in a way where his showcases had themes. So obviously once it was a movie theme showcase, so everyone had to work a couple of movies, or even the Battle of the Bands that he'd run at our school is to try and stop the metal band only doing metal stuff and the pop band only doing pop stuff and those kind of things. He'd say, all right, round one is Beatles versus Rolling Stones, and round two is movie themes, and round three is this. So, and yeah, you know, aside from that, I had another fantastic music teacher, Ramona, who is sort of, I think, is still running the show at my high school, who would also do things like, you know, lunchtime performances or get you up at assembly and running the choir and just making a really nice supportive environment conducive to the learning. And I think that's, again, tying into the identity is, you know, there's footballers who all they want to do is play football and they've got plenty of options to do that, kicking the ball at lunchtime and doing those kind of things. But having that for your musicians who do want more than a half an hour lesson or an hour lesson once a week is what other things can you get them into that's going to engage them and give them that sense of self-fulfillment and progression in their own career and their own destiny.
Yeah, I've always believed strongly in the peer group at that age as well. Well, we all know that that's hugely strong. But for them to see Michael on stage playing guitar here, oh, Michael's in the Battle of the Bands over here, oh, Michael's playing for that evening concert here or whatever, everyone starts going, oh, Michael's that cool guitar dude. How awesome is, how epic is he? You got to listen to him. Michael, you know, come and play this for us and things like that. And the more that their friends or your friends in this case can see you doing that, the more, again, you get to identify yourself as, oh, yeah, I'm a pretty good guitarist, aren't I? This is kind of fun. And that's one of the reasons that I really push music teachers to make sure that as part of the learning that their students are doing, that they're learning, as you've said a number of times during this podcast, that they're learning things that they want to learn and that really resonates with them, because they're the things that their peer group will listen to and go, oh my God, that's AC/DC. How cool is that? I know what that is. But if they're, in the case of piano, only playing music which maybe their friends won't understand or know, then there's less of that identification and the peer group support. Have you seen that in effect as well?
Yeah, I've seen so many. I laugh, and I won't name names, but one of the high schools that's close to my area is renowned for having a really good classical guitar program. And most people don't really like being forced how to read music and things like that. So we basically had anyone who wanted to learn contemporary guitar who went to that school would come to us for lessons and then progress insanely fast with our learning systems and things like that. So people will quit lessons if you don't provide them with what they need or what they want, or it's not in alignment with their goals. And that's, you know, we'll save this for another talk, but you need to be aligned with your students' goals and help make everything that you do relevant to them. And yes, there's going to be things that they need to learn, but your job as a teacher should be to teach them what they need in the context of what they want. And that way you're covering both bases. But yeah, if people, you don't put them in the right peer group Am I addressing your question properly? Can you just repeat what that was?
No. You absolutely are. Just around that, being able to identify our students as musicians by the music we give them being popular and recognized and things like that, so that the parents will say, oh, Tim, you're sounding so good here. And then the grandparents do, and then the godfathers and mothers, and then their friends do, and everyone says, oh, Michael's that cool guitar dude. And that strengthens your own identity. That makes you want to practice and play more.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, at my school, I was kind of like the Van Halen kid. I did all the fancy lead guitar playing and very extroverted, show-offy kind of stuff. But I totally crave that. And the guitar was a means of, you know, me getting out in front of people and showing off and getting some cool feedback and things like that. And then just wanting to get better and better and better. And then being able to be provided with gigs and feedback and things like that, and having, you know, a whole bunch of people turn up for a battle of the bands, and, you know, it just feeds into the cycle. And then that was just stuff that I replicated going into, you know, my teen years playing in bands, early 20s playing in bands, was just building on that reputation, that confidence and self-belief that just, you know, came from my parents being ultimately supportive. I couldn't have asked for two better parents in regards to music. Absolutely fantastic. I had everything I needed in terms of, you know, the equipment, in terms of the support at home and being able to practice. And even, you know, my dad had a panel beating factory at the time, and on Saturdays once a month we'd get to go there when no one was there and just crank up all the amps and make as much noise as we wanted.
So that's cool.
Little things like that were awesome. But also getting involved in the community and doing stuff at our local footy club. You know, we had obviously band nights a couple of times and things like that. So it was all the more opportunities to express who we were through our music, the better. And I think a teacher encouraging that and just going, look, the person in front of me is not just a means to an end or a paycheck. As again, many guitar teachers, unfortunately, their primary concern is themselves and their music career, and teaching is just, you know, an extra $200 a week to them, and they don't really take that investment in their students. And that can be the difference between someone, you know, getting put off by bad lessons and never experiencing the lifelong reward that is learning a musical instrument. Or if you just capture that spark of imagination and ignite that passion in them, that's what creates the next Jimi Hendrix, the next Van Halen, the next Beethoven. And I'd hate to think how many musicians have, or Beethovens, and like I just said, those musicians, how many of those has the world missed out on because someone was put off by a bad teacher when they were 6, when they were 7, when they were 15, or, you know, whenever it was they got the spark to try and learn.
Well, that's what we're all about at Top Music, supporting teachers to be as amazing as they can possibly be and enjoy it in the process and be really confident. So I know we'll get into that in a future part in this series that we've just started today. Sheet Music Plus is the home of the world's largest selection of sheet music. Offering more than 2 million titles, you'll find everything you need for your students, for yourself, and for every group you play with. Shop songbooks, classical repertoire, and piano methods all conveniently shipped to your front door. At Sheet Music Plus, you can also choose from hundreds of thousands of digital scores that you can download and play instantly, perfect for lessons and last-minute needs. And best of all, teachers are eligible to get 8% cash back on all purchases with the Sheet Music Plus Easy Rebates program. Shop today at sheetmusicplus.com. Let's just go quickly through what happened after school for you that's brought you into becoming a guitar teacher. When did you think you might have wanted to do that?
I was basically teaching people before I'd even finished high school. So I had my two of my good mates who would always go to concerts together. You know, back when I was 16 and Dad had drops off to AC/DC or Judas Priest or Guns N' Roses or things like that. And they weren't, you know, guitar players, but they liked the music. So I'd show them how to play a few things. And even at the school, I'd be showing other people. I think I did a couple like library lunchtime sessions where I'd help people out. But if I go back to when I was like 10 and 12, I was always making clubs. As cheesy and I hate to admit this, I had something called the Bug Club when I was in like about 10, and I used to teach other kids at school about clubs and about bugs and insects. And then it was like teaching
that's about Pokemon. Cute. So
I've just always gravitated towards, you know, naturally teaching people and helping people out. But yeah, as soon as I found guitar, that was it. I knew I wanted to play guitar for the rest of my life, and I knew that a viable career option, as laid out for me by my guitar teacher and my teacher, my music teacher, was that, yeah, go to uni, get a guitar degree or a music degree, and then get an education diploma. I think it's been upgraded now to a master's or something you need, or a graduate diploma. But essentially go to uni and then you teach in a school, and that way you get to teach for a couple of hours a week, and then you're a classroom teacher for a couple of hours a week, and then after hours you become a musician. And I was pretty much set on that for a couple of years until one lesson at high school, and this actually and this sort of segues into me going to university playing guitar, and I actually had an arm injury. Which put me out of action for almost 3 years. So I was the 6 hour a day kind of practicer. And then when I went to university, I really actually struggled in the first year, not because I wasn't practicing, but just because I went from an exam kind of background where I was taught that I need to pass these pieces, I need to learn these songs and these pieces in order to pass a VCE exam in, 18 months or whatever. And then every scale, every bit of music theory, everything that I had to demonstrate was with the purpose of getting a good score on this exam. So I learned guitar pretty much like a parrot would learn how to, you know, copy speech. I could demonstrate a whole bunch of things. I could read it off the page. I could copy stuff that I'd learned by rote, but I didn't understand how the theory applied to guitar. I didn't understand how to be creative or to improvise. And then going from, you know, the coolest guitar player at high school to the worst guitar player at university because I just had no idea and was actually competing against people who'd been playing since they were, you know, 8, 9, 10. I was just, it was a pretty rude awakening for me, but I was just hell bent on becoming the best guitar player. It wasn't dissuasive to me or intimidating to me. It was just, I wasn't where I needed to be. And even if I'd practiced like 6 hours a day, it wasn't enough to get me where I needed to be. So the only alternative was practice more. And by practicing more, I actually gave myself an arm injury. So I ended up basically getting pins and needles in my hand and wrist and elbow. And long story short, I had about a month off to recover. And then after a month, I went back and played. And then it was still bad again. And then I had another.
Is this left arm or right arm?
This is my fretting hand. So
your fret hand, left. Okay.
Yeah, you. So my left. I'm left-handed, but obviously guitar, you can. It's not like piano where you're ambidextrous. But yeah, my fretting hand, so I basically had an injury and that turned out to be nerve damage. I had a nerve compression injury called cubital tunnel syndrome, which is basically carpal tunnel, but you suffer it in the elbow, the ulnar nerve rather than the wrist in your median nerve. And I basically, you know, kept having big chunks of time off. It totally devastated my practical subjects and I had to withdraw from uni. And I ended up just having an operation. So I tried every treatment under the sun and none of them worked and I just opted to have surgery. But the benefit of that was 6 weeks after the operation, I basically couldn't use my hand. I was up in plaster and I got my hand unwrapped and I struggled. And I know the viewers aren't going to be able to see this. Maybe we can pop the video up later. But the surgeon said, all right, we've unwrapped you. Now make a fist. And my hand would just like shake like that, like someone's with Parkinson's or something like that. And I couldn't even make a fist. And my first exercise for the first week was basically just to touch my thumb to my fingers, and that's what I had to work on for the first week. And then the second week was making a fist, and I think it was around about the third week he goes, okay, now you can play guitar. You can play guitar for 5 minutes every day. You do 5 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes in the afternoon, and 5 minutes at night, and that's all you can do for this week. But next week, if you're not in pain, you can do 10, and the week after that, you can do 15. And every week, I'd progressively add 5 minutes on. And, you know, when he said I could play guitar, that was the happiest day of my life.
I bet.
Even though it was kind of just like doing really basic stuff and not overdoing it and trying not to hurt myself, it forced me to learn about what is the most optimized, efficient way of learning and how can I get 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour of learning or progress to take place in only 5 minutes of practice or 10 minutes of practice. So I was reading books from, you know, high performers, habit builders. Fortunately, my uncle is a coach, or at the time was a coach at the Richmond Tigers. So, and my dad's an AFL level football player. So I could see what they did in their coaching and trying to get their own athletes to perform at high levels. And I was just using this on myself in my practice sessions. So, and within about 6 months of being able to play guitar again, I was actually playing better than the whole point.
Oh, wow. Really? That's amazing, isn't it? So how old were you at this stage when you're finally getting back and actually playing better than you were before?
Yeah, so I had the surgery when I was 20 on, I think it was like June, it was about 10 years ago now. So it was about June when I was 20. And then I was in my, at my 21st birthday, I was in like an arm sling like that. So, and I took it off to that wasn't right. I'd had it off by then, but I was wearing the sling because I obviously didn't want to injure myself or do too many hugs or anything like that. But I basically took it off for, I think, two occasions. One was to dance with my friend who's a professional dancer and almost killed me. And the second was, my guitar teacher and his wife and a couple of other friends from high school were the band at my 21st, and I got up to do two songs with them. And then, put the sling back on and went back to taking it a little bit easier. But, yeah, so I was 21 when I had this operation, and by the end of the year, I got the chance to join a band. I was at another party talking to someone, and a local band in the area who was one of my favorites was actually looking for a guitar player. And I basically said, hey, I'm in this cast, but as soon as I get the go from the doctor, I'm going to be the guy that joins this band, and we're going to go do some awesome stuff together. And from the certainty that I said that with them, they knew I was the right guy, and they needed a guitar player and I needed a band. And I went and auditioned. I was apparently one of three people that auditioned, and I'd use like my blocks of 15 minutes and 20 minutes of practicing to try and figure out their songs by ear. And I managed to learn half of their album, in a couple of months, however long it was. And I auditioned, and I basically said, I can only play three songs because I'm only allowed to play for like 25 or 30 minutes at that point. And, this is what my audition is going to have to be. And I got the gig, and that became, part of my musical career for the next 7 years. But for me, it was about never refusing to give up. And I was just so dead set on being a rock star, on being the world's best guitar player, and just playing music and making guitar who I was, that, I refused when doctors said, you're going to have to find something new to do. You never play guitar again. You can't use your hand. You've got nerve damage. I was just like, all right, well, which doctor's going to tell me how I fix this? Not you can't do it. So obviously it's important to take medical advice seriously, but I was just like, all right, well, who's the guy that can fix me? And that ultimately led me to finding additional help in terms of getting over RSI and tendonitis and carpal tunnel syndrome. So if anyone's listening to this that does have ongoing RSI-based issues, just get my email off Tim or hit up this podcast, because I've had ongoing issues, and part of why I probably had the injury in the first place was playing with too much tension. So that's something I'd love to talk about, or we can do a whole other podcast on at another time, overcoming RSI-based injuries. But I just refused to give up. I was set on becoming a musician. And as I went to uni, it became about, okay, now you're going to have to get a teaching job and do this, this, and this. And the point where my life changed is when one of the teachers at university, who wasn't my teacher was sick, so I got to have a lesson with the head of guitar. And he sat me down, he told me this story. He goes, hey, Michael, you need to take yourself seriously. You need to get your business organized. And he told me this story, which is probably so true for many musicians, and why I'm potentially a little bit critical of people who do get stuck in academia, is because he said, okay, well, I was, this up and coming hot guitar player in Melbourne. I had a fairly good reputation within the jazz scene. I'd been on Sunrise and a few shows like that, playing the morning show on guitar, and he's a phenomenal player. And he goes, we got to open for this guitar player called Mike Stern, who is one of the most famous jazz fusion guys. He's always going to be in the top, 5 to 10, depending on who you ask. But they opened for Mike Stern in Melbourne, and then they looked over and Mike Stern was watching from the side, and they go, oh, they got a bit nervous, and they end up playing the show. And after the show, they got off stage and Mike Stern was like, guys, that was amazing. Gave him high fives. And he goes, you guys are going to do Sydney and Brisbane with us on the next 2 dates. Can you do that? And they're like, yeah, sure. Let's go do Sydney and Brisbane. So they made the arrangements over the next week. They went to Sydney with Mike Stern. They went to Brisbane, and he goes, we got off the stage in Brisbane after our third show with Mike Stern. And he's like, guys, I've got some good news for you. He goes, what? He goes, I've just spoken to the record label and the touring company, and we want you to open for the next 40 dates of our US tour.
Oh, wow.
So, and he goes, and after that, we're going to take you down to the studio and we're going to record this album of yours, which you told me about the other night that you've been working on. So we're going to sign you up with, I don't know the name of the record label at the time, but basically got offered a 40-date tour and a record deal. And he goes, and you know what? I'm good friends with Miles, and I know he's going to be interested in what you guys are doing. And he's obviously talking about the great Miles Davis.
Wow.
Who's that? What an incredible. Mike Stern obviously did two or three albums with Miles Davis. And, they couldn't believe it. They were, basically giggling at the same result you get when you win $10 million in Tats Lotto. They couldn't believe it.
So, as a musician, that's dream, right?
Yeah, the dream, this was the moment that they'd spent the last 10 years of their musical career to this point leading up to. And then he goes, well, I got home and I couldn't wait to tell my wife. And I said, honey, guess what? Da, da, da. And he goes, I'm going to go to the United States. I'm going to play 40 dates with Mike Stern. I'm going to go over there and record an album. I'm going to meet Miles Davis. And, you know, she went from happy to see him be home to looking a bit nervous and apprehensive to then fear setting and going, well, you can't do that. You can't leave me here. Who's going to work? How are you going to pay for the family? How are you going to feed us? All that kind of thing. And then, you know, she very quickly told him that was a bad idea and talked him out of it. And, you know, he tells me he rocked up to work the next day because they both worked at the institution. And he goes, you know, Rob, I got some bad news. And the other guitar player in the band, and he goes, oh, yeah, me too. He goes, oh, I'm not going to be able to do this tour. And he goes, yeah, me either. And, you know, they had worked that whole point in their lives up to that one moment where they had to, all they had to do was make a decision to say, yes, we're going to do this tour. And they would probably be household names within jazz guitar. But they got to that point and they had to say no because they didn't set themselves up for a life of freedom. You know, they're stuck in their 9-to-5 jobs and they're probably living really, really fulfilling lives as musicians, helping people grow and learn. But, you know, why did they start playing guitar in the first place or what did they want to get out of it? They sort of had to settle for a teaching job, which wasn't necessarily their plan A. And then when that opportunity came along, they weren't ready for it because they didn't have the money, they didn't have the time, they didn't have the freedom to be able to go and say yes. And, you know, there's that opportunity that we all dream about gone like that. And that just made me go, wow, I am doing the wrong thing here. I was straight away, I just this sick feeling in my stomach that these guys who are obviously, you know, infinitely better guitar players than me, who already know all the contacts and have this within the Melbourne music scene, you know, are pretty big players. And they just missed their opportunity because they didn't set themselves up for that because they're stuck lacking those free things. They don't have the time, the money, or the freedom. So I was like, oh, I need to give myself something that's going to support my music career and give me time and give me freedom so that when that opportunity comes along, I can say yes. And that was basically what led me to start pursuing business books and things like that and what ultimately created who I was now. So I was completely happy between the ages of 16 and 24 going, you know what, if I just make enough money to be able to fund my music career and play gigs a couple of times a week, I'll be happy. And I couldn't be have been more wrong. If I could go back in time and give myself one more bit of advice, it would be to, you know, basically get yourself organized, learn the power of compound interest and to take things seriously from the word go, because ultimately if you have bad attitudes towards money or you're unorganized or you're doing it because you love it, which is all still important, doing it because you love it, the people who are more organized than you and have a better mindset are going to take your opportunities away. And that's whether you care or like it or not, the people who are the most organized are the ones that are going to take those opportunities.
And this is where you bring a real depth of business knowledge and experience as well to the work that we're going to be doing together to bring support and training to guitar teachers. And I know you're super passionate about not just helping guitar teachers with scheduling, billing, the teaching side, the pedagogy side of things, but also very much with running their business and setting themselves up for success, as you've said, whatever that looks like for whoever it is. And I'm very conscious that many members in our community and our followers and listeners, many of them are very happy with a small studio of 5 to 10 students or 20 or fewer and just doing it, you know, on the side, so to speak, and they don't want to grow a massive studio and things like that. But then you do have those teachers who really do have that drive to go, I really want to hire some other teachers and build a music school. So we'll be catering for that whole spectrum when we get stuck into helping our guitar teachers through Top Music Pro Guitar. Michael, I'm conscious of the time. I wanted to just say where we're at kind of now, where you're at now. Can you give us a quick overview of what your teaching looks like at the moment?
Yeah, well, I'll lead into that from this point and saying that it'll wrap up the story as well, is basically age 24, I was happy making $16,000 to $18,000. I wouldn't say I was happy, but I was content making about $16,000 to $18,000 a year teaching guitar, maybe about 8 hours at a local music shop and then working in a supermarket for another 10 to 12 hours a week. And that allowed me to play music on the weekends and have fun. But, you know, I couldn't do anything amazing paying for tours was obviously out of the question because I couldn't actually, you know, do anything or operate on a big level. So I read these business books, I attended a few seminars, and I basically made a decision that I was going to create an ideal life that allowed me to have the time, money, and freedom to pursue my music career and to be the best guitar teacher that I could be. And I chose guitar teaching as my vehicle. So basically I got organized, and within 12 months, I was earning over six figures teaching guitar. Another 6 months down the track, I was earning about $200,000 teaching guitar, primarily from home and running a few school programs, but I was doing about 142 students a week all by myself.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
That is crazy. But you had groups in there, right?
You can't do it without groups.
Yeah, got it. Okay. And we're going to be talking about groups later on, so we don't have to go into that just yet.
Yeah. You know, there's many ways, and obviously when I was teaching 142 hours a week, I did it for a couple of months, but I realized that wasn't sustainable. And, you know, it all comes down to what is your ideal life, and what was good for me and what I valued meant that I had to work crazy amounts of hours to get to that. But for you, if you're happy teaching, you know, 10 to 20 hours a week and just doing some stuff on the side, and that's success to you, then go for it. Or if you want to have a big studio and be earning massive amounts of money, then that's absolutely fine as well. And one thing that I would say is a common mistake that too many people make is sometimes, you know, you can run a business with 20 teachers and 500 students, but it's not necessarily always as profitable as you teaching 30 people on your own doing a couple of hours a week. So you got to determine, you know, do you want to work hard and grind, or do you want to take a more casual approach and figure that one out? But today I run Melbourne Guitar Academy. We're sitting around about 200 students because this COVID situation seems to be knocking us about. but we've done really, really well through online teaching and just not accepting the fact that, you know, growth has to stop just because the economy shut down and you can't do anything. So we've been very proactive in basically creating online lessons, and that even prompted me to launch my Guitar Dojo Online and my Guitar Ninjas programs and try and help them go to a broader audience. So my school's got about six teachers. My partner, Amy, she runs the piano side of things. It's her own business, but we sort of integrate things under the same sort of company structure. But essentially between us, we'd have close to somewhere between 250, 300 students, manage a few school programs in our local area. So again, multiple streams of income. And then I'm getting deep into the online kind of thing. So very keen to be partnering with Top Music so we can help other teachers, you know, make the change that I made, not knowing any different and being totally unorganized, to being able to make the amount of money that they need to live the life that they want. And ultimately, when you are financially looked after, that's going to lead to you being way more motivated. It's going to lead to you being the best version of yourself. It's going to lead to your students benefiting because they're learning from the best version of you that you are. And I was still the same person without money that I am with money, but now I can do a whole bunch of way cooler things and create more and more opportunities for my students, for my family, for myself, that I never could have when I was earning 16 to 18 grand a year. But, you know, as soon as I could start earning significantly more amount of money, then all of a sudden I could buy better equipment. I could be the best studio. I could provide a nice place for someone to come into. And, you know, I've taken guitar lessons with countless teachers, and sometimes you're sitting in a nice room, sometimes you're walking through sometimes you're walking through the mess of the party the night before that they still haven't cleaned up because they forgot you were coming, and you rock up and they're, you know, just there in their shorts, no shirt on, going, oh, what are you doing here? We had a lot, right? So I'm sure many people listening have had a horror story like that over the years, but you can be the musician who struggles for their art and sort of has a sense of nobility in that, or you can take the responsibility and control over your life and be a provider for yourself and your family, make your own opportunities and create the most awesome learning experience and music studio that you can and benefit everyone.
Well, if you want to find out more about how Michael's done that and to be able to take on board some of his suggestions, then keep listening to part two. We're going to be unpacking more of Michael's suggestions and strategies and tactics around teaching in particular, and teaching of any instrument in part two. And then we're going to focus and hone in just for our guitar teachers in part three and talk a little bit more about the kind of things that we're going to be offering in Top Music Pro Guitar. I cannot wait to speak to you again in part two. Michael, thanks for sharing your story today.
Looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed meeting Michael Gumley, our new head of guitar here at Top Music, and learning a bit more about his own story. Now, in part two, which is going to be released next week, We're talking about Michael's ideas for teachers of every instrument. We're going to be talking about classical conservatism versus embracing change, contemporary music, your role as a teacher, importance of mindset, reframing good and bad students to engaged and disengaged students, and what to do about keeping students highly engaged, talking about my way or the highway, if you've ever felt like you've needed to lay down the law and sort of say, right, this is it, this is what we're doing. We're going to unpack a whole lot of different things, and these are really relevant to teachers of every instrument, so I'd love and encourage you all to tune in next week when we unpack part two in our series. And as I said before, what we're doing here is starting our planned launch to our Top Music Guitar program in our Top Music Pro membership. So if you do know of any guitar teachers, or if you teach guitar on the side, please do share this episode with as many people as you can, and also jump on our social media channels, leave comments, questions, whatever you'd like. We are also putting out lots and lots of blog articles now, specifically for guitar teachers. Now, piano teachers, don't you worry. We're still supporting you guys too, but we're now adding some content for guitar teachers too, and we're going to make it as easy as possible on the website to find the different instrumental information for you. All right, well, until next week, I've really enjoyed hanging out with you and with Michael, so we'll wrap up the show. I'm Tim Topham. This is the Topcast, and we'll catch you for part two next week. For more information about this episode and to find out how to enhance your own teaching, visit topmusic.co. You'll find everything you need for your studio, from lesson plans to cheat sheets, quick win teaching ideas, and guides on how to build your teaching business. Plus, you'll be connected to a global community of the world's top music teachers. And when you're ready, join hundreds of other teachers around the world by becoming a Top Music Pro member and get access to all our bonus content and flagship courses. And don't forget to follow topmusic.co on social media and subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it. That's all for today. We'll see you in the studio.